What is a placebo? Well, there are some interesting definitions, and let me share one or two with you. Someone has said, a placebo is a drug which is not a drug but acts like a drug. And then, of course, there are two types of placebos. One is called a pure placebo. This is something that has absolutely no medicinal value, such as a sugar pill, or sweetened water, or colored starch, for example. These are commonly used to make up a placebo. And certainly you wouldn't think that they'd cure strep sore throat or pneumococcus pneumonia. But that's called a pure placebo. Now there's an impure placebo. This is when you use a medicinal agent such as an antibiotic. You give it to the patient, knowing that it will not affect the particular problem the patient has. Now you see, penicillin has no effect on viral infections. So a patient comes to a doctor and he expects to get some kind of prescription that he can give his cold. And so the doctor gives him a shot of penicillin. That's an impure placebo, because penicillin isn't going to do his viral infection any good. Vitamins are given as an impure placebo. So are various minerals, hormones. This is what we call, they have therapeutic value. Vitamin C will cure scurvy. But when vitamin C is given to suppress a cold, it's called an impure placebo. Now the thing that has actually emerged from the study of placebos is what is called the placebo effect. The placebo effect is what goes on in the individual who is receiving the placebo. It's what it does in the person. And they really don't know how it works. But here are some suggestions. That it's some non-specific psychological or physiological effect with no pharmacologic action on the condition treated. Now, a pharmacological action is a drug action. In other words, it has no drug action. And whether it's from psychological or physiological motivations or both, nobody knows. And then another placebo effect results from an agent. This would be, say, a capsule or a tablet or an injection. A statement. This is what the physician or the healer may say. Or some action. This may be some therapeutic procedure that the person may be given, which in themselves cannot influence the result, but acts as some type of initiator of some benefit to the individual. A lot of study has been given to placebos. Now let me give you some of the, I've told you the sort of medicinal placebo, which is a capsule or a tablet or a syrup or something of that type. But surgery can be a placebo, or it can produce the placebo effect. So can acupuncture. So can biofeedback. If you travel to some exotic country like Acapulco, that can give a placebo effect. If you go to a famous institution like the Mayo Clinic, you can have a placebo effect. And an unusual diet or some very rare food. All of these have been shown to produce the placebo effect. Now, historically, placebos have been recognized for many centuries. In 1628, Robert Burton wrote, and he wrote in Old English here, that an empiric Now, an empiric is an untrained healer. An untrained healer or a silly surgeon. And he's referring here to the barbers. The barbers used to be the surgeons in those days. That more strange cures than a rational physician because the patient puts his confidence in him. And that word confidence is a very important word when we are dealing with placebos. Thomas Jefferson wrote to Dr. Caspar Wistar, and some of you may have heard of the Wistar Institute. Mr. Wistar set up research foundations that have supported research up until the present time, and this letter was written in 1807. He says, "One of the most successful physicians I have ever known has assured me that he used more of bread pills, drops of colored water, and powders of hickory ashes than all other medicines put together." Now that's a little historical background. Now what is the mechanism of action of a placebo? As I said, we're not sure, we don't know, but here are some suggestions. They feel that it has some effect on the cortex of the individual, and via the cortex, the autonomic or the automatic nervous system is activated, and there is some response from the hormone or endocrine systems that trigger actual physical changes. And this occurs without the patient being aware of what's happening. The awareness of the person is bypassed. Another suggestion is that through the cortex, in some unknown way, the endocrine system is turned on. And particularly, they think the adrenal gland may have some role in it. Another man has said the mechanism is unknown, but requires faith in the therapist or the agent. That is, you either believe in the doctor or the placebo. And you expect success. So it has to have confidence or faith in the practitioner, and you may have faith in the placebo as well, and then you expect success. And they feel that the healer, whether he be a physician or somebody else, the one who is proposing the therapy, has the most important influence to accomplish the placebo effect or bring about the placebo effect. Now, the effect of placebos are very similar to those of drugs or a medicinal herb. Sometimes they're equal to the real thing. They may exceed it. And usually, though, it's about half as effective as the real thing. Now you say, well, what's the real thing? Well, they have agents that will reduce blood pressure. They have been tried with hundreds of thousands of people, and given the circumstances, the blood pressure will come down. A placebo given for to a hypertensive patient will bring about 50% the reduction. This is on the average. Sometimes it may bring even more. Out of every 10 people, 4 people respond positively to a placebo. So it doesn't work every time. And here are some of the documented results from placebos. And these are all in the scientific literature. I have some references if people wish to have them. They lower blood cholesterol and reduced heart mortality in cardiovascular diseases. They produced improvement or cure, and these have been done in double-blind studies, where the individual proposing it and the individual in contact with the patient are different. And the one who contacts the patient doesn't really know what's going on. So they're double-blind study, and these are some of the in which there has been marked improvement or actual remission. and that is diabetes, angina pectoris, malignancies, spectrum of cancers, post-operative pain can be relieved, a suppression of cough, the suppression of nausea that comes on when a woman is pregnant, seasickness, headaches, Parkinsonism, arthritis, addiction to morphine, the pain after pulling a tooth, and some others that are here, one or two that I've got here that are rather clinically specific. Now, they actually can get toxic reactions from placebos. As I mentioned to you, antihistamines are given to people who are allergic, very allergic, and their side action is the person becomes drowsy. Well, a placebo given to someone for an allergy, that is not one individual, these are studies, they will get drowsy. It may be colored starch, it may be lactose, milk sugar, it may be something else, but they get drowsy. If the individual is given what they consider a stimulant or a depressant, placebos in this area can produce dizziness, abdominal distress, and watery eyes. There is one recorded case here where a person got a skin rash from a placebo that disappeared as soon as the placebo was discontinued. And there is a record of more than one person who became addicted to a placebo, and when it was taken away, he got withdrawal symptoms. So this is not just all in the head. Placebos have actual effects, usually beneficial, but occasionally adverse. In studying drugs, they have what they call time effect curves. In other words, the time you give it and when it will begin to show its effect. Placebos have they have time effect curves. Some drugs have an accumulative effect. Placebos can have a cumulative effect. Some drugs a person becomes tolerant to. In other words, you have to give more and more of the drug to get the same effect, or with the same dose, they get a smaller and smaller effect. And this has happened with placebos. They speak of a half-life of a drug. In other words, when will 50% of the effect be observed? And placebos have a half-life. Many of them do. Now, here are some factors contributing to the placebo effects. If the patient is very anxious and is looking for relief, the placebo is much more likely to be effective. The higher the anxiety level, the better the chance of the placebo effect. If the individual expects to receive relief, the chance of his receiving this relief with a placebo is much greater. His past experience with either medical or dental people, if it's been favorable, then the chance of having a placebo effect is much better. If it's been unfavorable, his chance of having a benefit from a placebo is much less. Placebos are more effective in relieving pain of a short duration than of a chronic pain. And then the effectiveness of any placebo declines with use. The longer it's used, the less effective it is. And many drugs are that way too. If a physician is a famous man, his chance of having a good placebo effect is much better than someone who is not known. And if the individual goes to a famous institution, the chance of having a better placebo effect is greater. And if it's a famous man in a famous institution, you have the best possibilities. Now, it is believed that as far as, now that's as far as the placebo effect. Now, as far as the practitioner is concerned, it's well felt that it is the power of suggestion, either directly or indirectly, that is the most important factor as far as the physician. If the physician believes that he really has something here, he is much more likely to produce benefit in the patient, even though his procedure, his agent is a placebo. They did a very interesting study some years ago. They took an office practice, and every individual in that office rolled out the red carpet to the patient. And they were gracious, they were empathetic, they were courteous, they bent over backwards, and also they subtly reinforced the capability of the physician. As soon as the door opened and the patient came into the reception room, the receptionist was right there. "Well, I'm so glad to see you. And if it was a new patient, have you been here before? No? Well, why don't you come over here and let's fill out this form." And then as the patient is filling out the form, the receptionist just casually says, "You know, you've made a very wise choice. The doctor here is a very capable man." And then goes on with it, and then as soon as the nurse comes, the nurse is gracious and cordial and takes the patient back and also again just drops subtly, "Well, what made you come here? You certainly made a good choice." And then the doctor rolls out the red carpet. He's warm and courteous and friendly and assuring. And then when he gives a prescription, he suggests to go to a certain pharmacist who is also cued in. And when the patient presents the prescription to the pharmacist, he says, "Oh, it's from Dr. So-and-so. How did you get him? He's one of the best around here." And they got fantastic results with placebos. And then the same group of people, the same physician, the same nurses, the receptionist and pharmacist, acted just the opposite. When the patient came in, the receptionist never even looked up, just kept on doing this. The patient came over and stood there, finally says, "What do you want?" And you may have had that treatment, by the way. And very curt, ungracious, when the nurse finally came and says, "Follow me," and stumps off, puts in the door, closes the door and walks off. And the physician comes and he's curt, he's rushing around, he's busy. He says, "My, I have so much to do," and as if this is a burden that he's got to do. And when he goes to the pharmacist, "Why on earth did you get this physician?" And the results were adverse all the way through. Hardly any placebo effect. And the same people doing just the opposite. So, if I ever going to practice, I tell you, I'll roll out the red carpet for any of you. The doctor-patient relationship is extremely important. Of course, he is the key in this whole thing. Now, here are some other things that they've discovered through research. If the placebo is unique, if it's complicated, if it's expensive, and if it's dangerous, it has the best chance of succeeding. They've even studied the color of placebos, the shape, the size, the odor, the taste. A multicolored capsule or pill is much more successful than a white one. Red stimulates while blue depresses. Large pills are more effective than small ones. And a pleasant smelling and a pleasant tasting one is much more effective than one that is unpleasant and has a poor odor. When I was a senior medical student, four of us who were grouped together, we were grouped together in fours through our clinical training, we were congratulated on getting perhaps the most famous arthritis specialist. He came once a week, one afternoon a week, to the White Memorial Clinic, and we happened to get him for the time that we were on service. And people would come from all over the Western United States to this man because of the success he had in treating arthritis. Well, of course, we were glad to be in his service so we could see what he was doing. Well, he was a very distinguished looking person. He dressed immaculately. He spoke nicely. He was very gentle and kind to the patients that every patient that he saw and examined. He was not hurried at all. He didn't waste time, but he didn't rush any contact with a patient. And he would prescribe one of four tablets. One was white, one was a pale green, one was a pink, and one was sort of almost brick red. We soon discovered that they were all aspirin tablets. And a patient would come and their joints were all swollen, their fingers were just painful, maybe in the ankle, knee, but hands. And he would gently feel them and go over the fingers and talk to the people all the time and says, well, now, I have something which I think will help you. Now, I want you to take it very faithfully and come back in 2 weeks. I want to see you then. And he would sign a prescription, and he had a little code that the pharmacist knew what color he had to give. 2 weeks later, the patient would be there. Well, how have you done? Oh, it's much worse. I think it's really aggravated it. And he'd look at it and he says, yes, that surely I think you are right. I think we're going to have to take you off that pill and give you something else. And he'd talk to them and he'd sign a prescription. And the code was there, and this time the person would, maybe he got a red pill, this time he'd get a green one. 2 weeks later, that patient would come back, there was hardly any swelling. The joints was movable, the fingers you could press, and the person was walking on the seventh heaven of delight. Said, you know, that worked just a miracle. And I don't know, I think the time I was on it, maybe one or two patients didn't get relief from any of the four. Almost everyone ultimately got relief. Now that's the placebo effect. There was a surgeon, you couldn't do it today, he'd be have a $10 million suit, or more, maybe $25 million. Women came with problems and distress in the pelvic area. And he carefully examined them. And then he ultimately, after various tests, he said, well, now I think the only thing that's going to take care of your problem is surgery. And finally the person would agree. He would tell them they should come in on such and such a day, and they would come in as they do the day before, and they'd have the lab tests, and the anesthetist would come and talk to them about the anesthetic, and pre-surgery medication was given. They'd be wheeled into the surgery. They would be anesthetized. A skin incision would be made. It would be sewn up, and they were sent back. And he published that paper. And the results were fantastic. That is a placebo effect. Here is a statement that I don't know who made it, but it's one of the quotes that goes down in the placebo literature. that the infinite capacity of the human mind for self-deception. And then somebody else has said, the placebo is the doctor that resides within. And Sir William Osler, some of you may have read his writings, I like to read his writings. He felt that the desire to take medicine was one which distinguished man from his fellow creatures. And Plato, way back in his day, in the Republic, commented, a lie is useful only as a medicine to man. The use of such medicine should be confined to physicians. In other words, he said, the only man who can tell a lie is a physician, because it works. And then the placebo effect is ever present in any kind of therapeutic relationship between a healer and the patient. And today, with all the studies that have emanated since 1945, when the double-blind study was introduced, suggest that 70% of the benefit that any patient gets going to any healer is the placebo effect. Now, I'm not talking about setting broken bones and removing an inflamed appendix and this type of thing. These are the medical problems. They believe that 70%, no matter whether they come to an MD, an osteopath, a chiropractor, a naturopath, you name it, is the placebo effect, the benefits. Now, here are those who claim that it's all right to use placebos. You know, there's a tremendous debate going on as to whether it's ethical to lie to a patient or deceive a patient. I don't know what you would do. Now, the word placebo is a Latin word which means I will please. And it arose from the fact that a patient would come expecting immediate treatment and relief. And when the physician really didn't know what to do, he hadn't figured out the diagnosis, he really didn't know what to give the patient, to please the patient, he would give something harmless. And this is the derivation of placebo. I will please the patient, I'll give them something, it won't harm them. And then through the years, they discovered that many, many patients were greatly helped. And that's how its use developed. All treatments, including surgery and potent drugs, have placebo effects. The abandoned therapies of the past owed their success to an unrecognized placebo effect. Now, this fellow says, deception is as integral to the placebo as copper is to bronze. Should we not accept the pragmatic view and in good conscience continue the judicious use of the invaluable placebo? Basically, immoral acts can sometimes be beneficial, possibly even necessary. Now, I'm giving different people. Now, one man who is today perhaps one of the champions of using placebos, he says this. It's a very important thing in research, because you can compare something that people believe is effective with something you know is ineffective. And if both of them are equally good, you know that it isn't effective. It's very successful in weaning people on narcotics of addiction. He feels that it's very useful in terminal patients. He says it's often when a patient comes in and they have a whole conglomerate of drugs, maybe 10, 15, you know, people many times are taking that many agents all at one time. Then he says to take them off and give them a placebo, and then maybe gradually add one or two back gradually to see if actually any of those had any type of beneficial effect. And then he says it's a temporary concession to the patient who cannot wait for a thorough diagnostic evaluation and is demanding some treatment right away. And then someone else has said that there seems little doubt that the patient's expectation of cure, reinforced by the physician's medical degree, his warmth and his confidence, the ritual of the office visit, and the writing of the prescription, the bottle in which the drug is dispensed, and the positive comments from the pharmacist all contribute to some degree to the placebo effect. Now here are some who are opposed to placebos. Deception is morally hard to justify, even or especially in the pursuit of truth. If we are to regard our patients as our moral equals and to respect their dignity as persons, we are similarly prohibited from practicing deception or manipulation on them. The patient will lose trust in his physician if found out he practiced deception. The essence of deception in medicine is the placebo, an ineffective but presumably harmless agent the patient is given thinking he is receiving a curative therapy. Dr. Cabot, very famous physician in the early part of this century, he says, "A public condition to look for the cure of all ills in a bottle of medicine and to neglect prevention and a health lifestyle in favor of a medical quick fix." So there are those who are opposed to it and those who are for it. And I would like to read you here just excerpts from a statement that I think is very good. "Frankness in dealing with a patient inspires him with confidence and thus proves an important aid to recovery. There are physicians who consider it wise policy to conceal from the patient the nature and cause of the disease from which he is suffering. Many, fearing to excite or discourage a patient by stating the truth, will hold out false hopes of recovery and even allow a patient to go down to the grave without warning him of his danger. All this is unwise. It may not always be safe or best to explain to the patient the full extent of his danger. This might alarm him and retard or even prevent recovery. Nor can the whole truth always be told to those whose ailments are largely imaginary. Many of these persons are unreasonable and have not accustomed themselves to exercise self-control. They have peculiar fancies and imagine many things that are false in regard to themselves and to others. To them, these things are real, and those who care for them need to manifest constant kindness and unwearied patience and tact. If these patients were told the truth in regard to themselves, some would be offended, others discouraged." That is the whole truth. "Christ said to his disciples, 'I have yet many things to say unto you, but he cannot bear them now.' But though the truth may not all be spoken on all occasions, it is never necessary or justifiable to deceive. Never should the physician or the nurse stoop to prevarication. He who does this places himself where God cannot cooperate with him, and in forfeiting the confidence of his patients, he is casting away one of the most effective human aids to their restoration." With the love and sympathy that Christ manifested for the sick is combined with the physician's knowledge, his very presence will be a blessing. How much greater, then, for you and me, to put our trust and confidence in God, who understands, who cares, and who can and will accomplish all that is best. Shall we pray? Heavenly Father, this evening again, we as a group are met together here, and we are so grateful for the blessings that Thou hast bestowed upon us during the past 24 hours, for the things that we have learned. And as we have studied this subject, Thou knowest that which is best, but we put our confidence in Thee who art the great physician, and pray that as we use the agencies that Thou hast recommended, we ask Thy blessing upon them, that if we are ill, that we may be healed, and as we minister to those who are sick and come to us for aid, that Thy blessing may be poured out. So help us now as we separate to go to our beds, give us a good night's rest and sleep, and if it is Thy will, may we awake tomorrow to enjoy the benefits and pleasures of another day, for we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Before you separate, I would like to give one experience. I didn't want to give it in the context of what I ended with, but I think I should tell you a personal experience that I had some years ago that fits very nicely into tonight's discussion. I was invited as a guest speaker to a weekend program somewhere in West Virginia. This was some years ago. I accepted the invitation. It was during the winter. I was to arrive at the particular airport at 2 p.m. and driven 4 hours drive to a lodge or facility up in some hills or mountains, and had a Friday night appointment to speak, and Sabbath morning, Sabbath afternoon, and Sunday morning. Well, it was bad weather. Plane after plane was delayed, and finally I arrived at the airport at 9:30 Friday evening. Should have got there too. And a physician was patiently waiting for me. He had kept calling in all afternoon, and finally the plane arrived and he was there to meet me. And he said to me, he says, "It's late, you're tired, I'm tired." He says, "It's 4 hours to drive, it's dark, there was snow on the ground." He said, "I think the best thing would be for you to come home with me. I have a nice guest room. Have a good night's sleep. We'll have breakfast and I'll get you there for your 11 o'clock hour appointment." I said, "That sounds good to me." So I got into his car and he drove a fair ways. He lived in the country. He had a farm. And we arrived at his home, and it wasn't a guest room, it was a little guest cottage. It was separated from the main building. He had the heat on, it was warm and cozy. He said, "Now I want you to have a good sleep and don't set your alarm." He said, "I'll wake you up in good time. Good night," and he was gone. Well, I got undressed, I got ready for my bed, and I could hear the furnace running, keeping the place warm. And I live in a much more salubrious climate than that, and it's my custom to open the window at night. When I was back in Washington, I opened my window each night. The bedroom was cold. We keep warm in bed, but the bedroom was cold, and I wanted to open the window. But I couldn't find the thermostat to turn off the furnace. And I looked all around every wall. It wasn't very big. I looked in the closets, I looked everywhere, and I could not find any way to turn that furnace off. So I thought to myself, "Well, I guess I'll have to sleep with the furnace running." And I got into bed, and it was too warm. I was thrashing around, couldn't go to sleep, and then, you know, your mind begins to rationalize. And some wicked thoughts began coming into my mind. And that was, after all, this physician is pretty well healed, and if I open the window and cold air comes in and he loses a little heat through the night. I need the sleep. I've got a busy day tomorrow. And so I got up. There were no street lights. It was out in the country. But there was enough light I could see the window because there was snow all over the ground. And I walked over to the window and I felt, and it was one of these double hung windows. So I opened the latch and threw the window up, got back into bed and was sound asleep. When I woke, there was light outside. And the first thought I had, I better close that window. So I hopped out of bed and went over to the window. And as I reached up to close it, here in front of me was the, the storm window was closed tight. Now that's what you call the placebo effect.
This has been another classic sermon from the Archive of American Christian Ministries. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.